chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawokta, Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB Radio 91. Lark is so excited about tonight's show because you know what dogs like to do with trees. Okay, Lark, you and Joey go on your blanket, okay? Go over on your blanket. Thank you. A couple of things before I introduce our guest. We are in the middle of our summertime radio fundraiser. It will continue through July 25th. And during Mouthful, I think, first of all, I would say I would love your support during Mouthful. The best way to show that support is to go online and krcb.org. You can just click through and decide what level you would like to and are able to support the station. Everything here at the station, or 95% of everything, is funded by listeners. I have been doing Mouthful for almost 21 years, coming up on my anniversary, and I have done it exclusively as a volunteer. Everyone involved with Mouthful has done it as a volunteer. So, you know, and I even pony up my money every year to become a member. So there's, you probably know the drill, $40 is the basic level on up to the $120 level with several in between, or as much as you would like to give.
That's the one we really like.
As much as you would like to give. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And on the website, there's up in the top right corner, there's a little red button that says donate.
There you go.
And if you listen to us on the streaming app, again, up in the right-hand corner, there's a little red heart that says donate. So you can donate from the KRCB app. We'll get the money. We'll know you like Mouthful and that you're supporting Mouthful because of the time you put it in. You can give us a note that says, I like Mouthful. I'm donating my money for Mouthful.
That would be really nice to do that. And one thing I have to tell you is really great. The $120 level, which you can pay at $10 a month, you get all of the other things for the levels below that. But you also get an invitation, a certificate, whatever you would like to call it, for a complimentary aperitif and Nouvelle cocktail tasting at Sonoma Aperitif Winery. We've had Laura Hager on Mouthful before, and her aperitifs, they go back, gosh, something like 700 years to the farm fermentations in France. They were called Vin du grand-mère, the wines of your grandmother. And she gleans fruit from all over Sonoma County, including at my house when she comes in September and picks whatever quince I'm not going to be harvesting that year. But she finds old pear trees that no one is harvesting. She finds so much local fruit, and she transforms them first into these absolutely exquisite aperitifs. I love them. But then she takes the fruit that has been macerating to become the aperitif, and she turns it into other things. It might be a shrub. It might then... She'll use some of it to make a shrub, which is a vinegar-based non-alcoholic drink, but then she'll also make a conserve out of the fruit. So she's doing something unique to this area and absolutely delicious, and you can find out about that for yourself with a tasting at the $120 level.
Now, is that for one or two?
It's for up to four people.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's for two to... It's a certificate for a free aperitif and Nouvelle cocktail tasting at Sonoma Aperitif Winery, which is in Pen Grove, for two to four people. So I just think that's... I mean, you should do it anyway, whether it has anything to do with supporting KRCB or not. She's doing something truly exquisite, delicious and unique. And I think it's about time that we had her back on Mouthful. And excuse me for 1 second. I have to bend over and pick up the puppy. Okay, Lark will sit on my lap for a while. And speaking of fruit, it's a very nice tie-in with this evening's guest. It is, for a return visit, Keith Borglund. Got it right?
Yes.
I'm never quite sure if I say your name correctly. Okay. You were at the... Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market yesterday,
yeah,
for your annual, for, no, is it, you go twice a year, don't you?
We go once a year in the summer to sell
fruit trees. I thought you did something in January.
In January, we're over at the Veterans Building across from the fairgrounds giving away 500 kinds of
fruit tree cuttings and free grafting and pruning classes. That's our really big event of the year.
Okay. Well, this one seemed really attended yesterday.
Yeah, we had a few hundred people showed up, raised over $2,000 for kids' agricultural scholarships.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. And what happens? What happened yesterday? What were you selling?
What happened yesterday? In January, all the collectors bring together, and the universities donate cuttings. And we teach people how to graft onto their existing trees or onto new rootstock. And we keep collector items that then the hardcore experienced grafters, we get together for a work party in March, and we buy a couple of hundred rootstock of apples, pears, peaches, plums, all kinds of things, and then graft them up and put them in 5-gallon pots that then I put on a drip line out in the back of the orchard. We had almost 200 of them this year. And grow them until they're ready to sell in the middle of July. Then,
so it just takes from January until July they're ready to sell?
Well, actually, they get planted. They're still sleeping in March when we graft them.
Mm-hmm.
And between March and July, they develop enough root and enough top growth. They'll be about 3 foot high, and they're ready to sell.
Oh. That seems so easy. To someone with
basically, it is. Yeah. I tell people, you know, if you can put a Band-Aid on your finger, you can learn to graft.
Really?
That easy.
And then,
and if you do much grafting, you will learn how to
put a Band-Aid on your finger. So, for somebody who knows absolutely nothing, let's go to grafting 101. When you say rootstock, what is that? What is it from? If you didn't graft anything onto this rootstock, what would it do?
It would grow the type of fruit it is, but probably not in an edible form.
Okay, and what fruit is it? Is
it
a variety of things?
We graft apple onto apple rootstock, peach onto peach
rootstock. Oh, okay, so you stay variety specific.
Mostly, especially for beginners.
Okay.
So the apple rootstock is grown specially because of its characteristics, and it's the rootstock that controls the size of the tree. So if you use a standard rootstock, the apple will grow to 30, 40 feet. If you use a semi-dwarf, it'll grow to 8 to 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use a dwarfing rootstock, you can keep the tree down as small as 3 or 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But then the grafting material you put on, the graft is always true to the parent. It's the same geoplasm. It is the exact same tree from which you mm-hmm. harvested the little cutting to put
so
on.
So is that what you do? You go to a mature tree and you just take a newer branch?
Yes. That's okay. The only way that the new tree will stay true to the original tree.
Okay.
Because if you try to do seed, it's always a cross of the two parents, just like people. Your kids don't look like exactly like
right.
their parent. With grafting, we can keep it exactly the same.
So is that similar, at least in terminology, to cloning?
Similar.
Similar, okay.
But cloning, you grow from a piece of tissue on itself.
Okay.
Whereas grafting, you could clone a tree and then graft a piece. But grafting is mechanical.
Ah, there we go. The operative word, mechanical.
Yes.
Okay. And then what is the physical process of grafting?
The live part of the tree is just under the bark. And so you try to take – it's nice to have a graft piece and a hosting rootstock the same size. It makes it easy. And you cut a wedge on the graft piece, and you cut a notch in the host tree. And the host tree is only a stick at this point. You know, mm-hmm. don't think about a big tree usually. It's just maybe as big around as two pencils.
Oh.
So you cut the
really
top
small.
Off, put a wedge in it, make a little wedge out of the graft, and just stab it in there. And apples and pears, for example, will take really easily, high success rate.
Do you have to do anything to bond them?
Yeah, you have to put a Band-Aid on it.
Literally.
So that
okay.
it heals together.
Okay.
It's like a Band-Aid, but without the little Teflon pad there in the middle. It's
uh-huh.
just, I've used, they make special grafting tape.
Mm-hmm.
When I was learning, I would even use cellophane and rubber bands and electrical tape. Mm-hmm. That's not the best way to do it, but it will
but
work.
It works.
Yes.
And then it just takes, it sounds like it doesn't take very long at all for it to take.
It'll start taking within weeks. And it'll start growing certainly within a month or two.
Uh-huh.
And then it'll grow. Whatever you graft it on will be the same as the source tree. Exactly. It is the same tree.
It is, yeah.
It is
right.
the same tree.
And then this is sort of a, might be a dumb question, I'm not sure. Why would you do it that way rather than, say, get a cutting and sprout roots from that cutting?
Well, the rootstock has characteristics that we desire. Like
okay.
here in the Santa Rosa Plain, we use M111 a lot as our rootstock because it will tolerate heavy soil. It'll tolerate wet soil. The flats of the Santa Rosa Plain, M111 is just happy as can be. Where there's other rootstocks that really prefer sandy, well-drained soil.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for example, our Bud 9 rootstock is a dwarfing rootstock. So the way it does dwarfing is it has a really weak root system. So if we want to keep the top of the tree small, we have to have a dwarf undercarriage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a Bud 9, we tell people grow like a tomato. It will need to be staked and drip irrigated its whole life, just
mm-hmm.
like a tomato.
Okay.
But it won't get much bigger than
a tomato.
Tree won't get much bigger than a tomato, though the fruits will be full size.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Now, one thing that I always wondered about is these trees that produce, one tree will give you all this different fruit.
Yes.
Tell us about that. I find that so intriguing.
Every graft that you do is going to be true to the graft.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have multiple opportunities on a tree, multiple branches, you can put multiple grafts. We have members that have in excess of 100 different apples on an apple tree, 100 different pears on a pear tree. Peach is an accommodating rootstock. On one peach tree, you can have peaches, plums, pluots, apriums, apricots, tomcots, all on one tree, like a fruit salad tree.
Yeah, I just find that so amazing. Are there
it
many
is.
Of those in Sonoma County?
Oh, we do. Many of our members have fruit salad trees.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, I didn't introduce the organization when I introduced you. So the members are members of, if I get this right, the Redwood Empire Chapter of California Rare Fruit Growers?
That's correct.
Okay, cool.
And
I
we're not
it right.
a commercial organization. We're just a garden club that we do have commercial members and mostly lay members,
mm-hmm.
a lot of collectors, a lot of backyard growers.
Mm-hmm.
People who just want some good fruit in the backyard fresh.
Yeah. When you say collectors, what differentiates them?
Well, when you start figuring out that the apples, for example, in the supermarket are grown for color and
shelf stability,
shelf life, and not for flavor.
Okay.
And then you go and you taste some of the more flavorful apples.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy except maybe at the farmers markets.
Right.
You go, I can just grow this in the backyard. And you do. And then you try one. You go, here's another one, and here's another one, and here's another. You know, there's 30,000 kinds of apples out there. Only 3,000 have names. 6 are available in most supermarkets.
30,000?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it was that many.
Mm-hmm.
How many apples do you grow?
I've got 40 or 50 types of apples.
Mm-hmm. And I see that you brought one apple, and I'm wondering what it is. I'm going to guess it's some type of Gravenstein.
It's not.
It's not? Oh, because from a distance.
There's lots of apples that have stripes that are not Gravensteins.
Okay. It's like half stripes and then half almost like a pippin.
Yeah, this is a very special apple. This is a true Johnny Appleseed apple.
Oh, wow.
Which is not really a named variety, because what Johnny Appleseed did is he took seeds and dispersed them, mostly for the purpose of people growing apples to make hard cider.
Right.
And there's a Johnny Appleseed Museum in Urbana, Illinois, and I happened to meet somebody who was on the board there, and he sent me a stick that I grafted and have now been sharing. So that stick is that same tree that he took the cutting from that they have traced all the way from when Johnny Appleseed planted at this farmer's place. And it is a great apple.
Cool.
It's not ready to taste yet. It will rip your lips off. It's so sour.
Right now?
It's not ready until November, probably.
Oh, wow.
But it's a big, healthy, juicy, great cider apple.
It's really hard.
It is right now.
Which, that's something I like in apples. I still remember an apple I ate. I was 5, maybe 6 years old. I was in my mother's car. We had just come out of a grocery store. It was, I think, a Red Delicious. That's what it said in the grocery store. And I know Red Delicious doesn't have a reputation for being a flavorful apple, but I still remember the taste of that apple, and it was, and the texture. It was so delicious.
You know, the Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, they got their name for a reason, and it's not the same apple as is on the shelf that you buy today.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're 10 or 15 generations down from those apples that they named Delicious because they were delicious. And if you can find one, like I have one of the old Yellow Delicious,
mm-hmm.
and it is, and it does not taste at all like anything you can buy in the supermarket.
Anything I've ever bought in a supermarket is when it comes to apples, is disappointing.
Yeah, but they're not really grown for the taste so much.
I know, which is really odd and sad. What do you like to do with apples? Other than
everything,
eat them.
Given that I grow so many kinds, I try to do everything. I try them. I cook with them. I bake them.
What are some of the things you like?
I do ciders.
I love shrubs. What are some of the things you like to cook?
Baked apple with goat cheese and honey from the hives. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Certain apples are better than others for pies. Like our Gravenstein is probably the locally most famous all-around good apple, including for pies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some kind of apples will just turn to mush in a pie.
Right.
And some, you have to add sugar. I try not to do things that I have to add sugar.
Because,
I'll just eat sugar if I want to eat sugar.
Yeah, yeah. Because I asked partly because, I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing at the Gravenstein Apple Fair. I'll be doing a cooking demo.
Yeah, and Slow Food will be there again. You're often over at
Slow Food
booth
last year. And I will be again if there's not a wedding. I'm supposed to attend a wedding on Saturday of the fair, but I haven't gotten the invitation yet. So if it's been postponed, then I'll be there at the Slow Food booth. And then on Sunday at noon, I'll be doing a demo. And one of the things I've been doing recently, and if I can make the logistics work, I mean, you have to feed 60 to 100 people when you do a demo. So, you don't want to be cooking for a really long time. And, you don't want to make it too complicated to actually get it on a plate and pass it to the audience. But I've been doing something called Normandy chicken. And it's a fairly traditional recipe out of Normandy, France. And just quickly off the top of my head, saute, you melt some butter in a pan, and you have apples that you've peeled, cored, and cut into nice thick wedges. You saute those wedges in the butter till they get nice and brown. You take them out. And then I use chicken thighs because I think chicken thighs taste better with long cooking. So brown some of the chicken thighs. Put everything back together in the pan. Pour some hard cider over it. Cook it for 15 minutes or so. And then finish it with cream, with heavy cream.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're going to put some chopped parsley or some snip chives on top of it. It's so good, especially when you have the apples that will hold up without disintegrating. It's really delicious. And
so is it still savory, or could you put ice cream on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't put ice cream. It's pretty savory. You have the sweetness of the apple coming through. And I'll serve it either with little roasted potatoes or, as I did the other night, with creamy polenta. Put it on top of creamy polenta.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice dish. It's really delicious. So I'm going to do that if I can make it work for a crowd. If not, I'll probably do a ginger apple cider vinaigrette because that's really easy.
Mm-hmm. You made me think one of the things we do with apples, or we have people do also, is you don't really need an apple dryer to dry apples. You slice them thin. You know, you can get one of those little spiral cutty things from the markets that'll slice them an eighth of an inch perfect all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just got a sharp knife and a bit of care and watch out for your fingers, slice them thin, lay them on a cookie sheet, put them on the dash of your car pointing south, crack the windows, and they'll dry over 3-4 days, and your car will smell great.
Oh, that's so great.
It's so easy.
As long as you don't live in the fog bank.
You
have to start at the beginning of the heat wave.
Yes.
So you've got 3 or 4 days.
Or you don't be in a parking lot or something. You know.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
It works great.
And yeah, your car would smell really good. You've got something else over there that you brought. It's right here.
Oh, this. These are Persian mulberries.
Oh, wow.
I grow about 200 varieties of fruit on my 3 acres. And watch out for your fingers. It will stain anything permanently, anything it touches.
Permanently?
Permanently.
Wow.
Yes. It makes a good clothing coloring if you would waste them on that. But they have this special flavor. I don't know what it is. Almost everybody who comes to my place at one point or another declares this as their favorite tasting fruit of the place. Now, you can't buy them in a market because they go from super sour to overripe in about 2-3 days. You got to just tickle them off the tree so they just barely drop.
And it's not, they're not from a bush, right? They're from a tree.
Well, my tree is only about 10 feet tall, and it is a grafted tree.
That's pretty tall.
I don't know what they put on it. Well, you know, you're American, and Illinois mulberries will get 50 feet.
Oh.
So it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's reachable from a reasonable ladder, and you can keep them pruned and down.
Uh-huh.
But they're slow growing, so you really won't get any usable fruit for 5-6 years, mm-hmm. and they really start coming on.
Yeah, I have a friend with a mulberry tree in Sebastopol, but it's not this variety of mulberry.
There's lots and lots of varieties. Around here we get Pakistani, but this is a Persian.
Uh-huh.
And I met this woman from Iran and said, oh, there's 100 kind of Persian mulberries too. And I go, okay, well, not that I can find.
It's a remarkably complex flavor.
It is, with a great finish.
Great finish. Long finish.
Mm-hmm.
Very long finish. And it's definitely berry-like, mm-hmm. but it has all these other dimensions.
It has melon.
Melon and something right around the edge of your palate that's almost, but not quite savory.
It's my favorite fruit for a shrub.
Oh.
By far.
Really?
And you know, what I do is, you know, last year I was lucky enough to have a big enough crop that I couldn't eat them all fresh, and I froze some.
Mm-hmm.
So as I empty my freezer through the rest of the year, I shrub it.
Oh, yeah. My favorite shrub last year, well, I had two. One was blueberry that I made with a spiced red wine vinegar that I'd made.
Hmm.
And then the other one was apricot. And the apricot shrub was just, I put in some crushed cardamom and some crushed white pepper.
Yeah, I'm not that brave.
It was gone in a heartbeat. On that note, we're going to take a musical break, and we'll be right back with more talk about rare fruit.
whatever won't I do for me, mama? Hey, mama, red, where do you go? Red, mama, red, come on and rise on up the pole.
It's Mouthful. My guest this evening is Keith Borglund of Redwood Empire Rare Fruit Growers.
Yeah, the Redwood Empire chapter. Our
Redwood Empire chapter.
The initials crfg.org, and you can track through there to our chapter website. And one of the nice things about our chapter website is we've archived all – we have a listserv where you can talk about any kind of fruit things, and it's a moderated listserv, so it's always clean. And we've archived all the discussions of the last 9 years. So if you want to, for example, learn something about walnuts, you can just dig in there and search, and everything about walnuts will come up.
Interesting. Let's talk about pomegranates.
Ooh. I'm not an expert, but go ahead.
I just love them. And I have one pomegranate tree, and I think that's not enough because I've not had any pomegranates. It's been in 6 or 7 years, and I figure I probably need another pomegranate tree to pollinate.
Probably. It varies by the different varieties. I think I brought – one of the things that's nice about being a member is you get this really great magazine, and it's just not the same as looking at – pictures online, but one of them in here, I brought you some samples. Just by coincidence, it turns out a number of our members have articles in these. One of them gets into the Southern California pomegranate breeder. Here we go. Look at these beauties.
Oh,
this article in here will give you almost everything about what you need for California pomegranates.
John Shader. Thousands of varieties. That is so amazing.
Something interesting about pomegranates is it was mostly the Soviet Union that was working on the breeding programs, and they had big scientific foundations. But when the Soviet Union broke up, where is it? Turkmenistan, one of those stands up there where the station was they're going to bulldoze it. They did bulldoze it and put up condos.
Oh.
And one of our members here in the county, who's a pomegranate expert, went to, if I get the story, went to Israel and got one of the exiles from that research station, went up and collected as many kinds of pomegranate cuttings as they could and brought them back. And some are named and some are numbered. We've got hundreds of varieties. You can get a
those
lot
are growing
of them
in, the Sonoma,
club.
In Sonoma County.
They're spread all over the world, but okay. we hosted the International Fruit Growers Meeting here a few years back, and I got one of the Turkmenistan pomegranates. It hasn't fruited yet. I'm waiting for it, but
so
there's
how many
a bunch
years?
Of them around.
How many years does
it take? Wolfskill. There's a big Wolfskill farm near here over by Winters, I think it is, that has, I think, hundreds of kinds of pomegranates available. And as a member, you can go to the tasting every year. I haven't gone because I'm really not a pomegranate guy. I don't have the right dirt for it. I'm down in the
So you're not a pomegranate guy when it comes to growing.
Yeah. You know, I got a few with the varieties called Wonderful Pomegranate. I mean, how many pomegranates can one person eat, you know?
You don't know me that well. I can, during the season, which I've always defined the season as from the moment in late August when the light changes.
Oh, yeah?
And it changes almost instantly. You'll be looking outside and suddenly it will turn to gold. And for years, I knew the next time I went to a market, whether it was that afternoon or 3 days, the next time I went to a market, there would be local pomegranates.
The way I find people ask me a lot, well, I don't know if my tree's ripe. I figure the tree's going to tell you by starting to drop some fruit.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be ripe, or with pomegranates, you know, one of them will crack.
Right.
And you can open up and start checking.
Yeah, well, since I didn't have a tree, it just got to where, and I didn't notice it at first. I mean, I didn't think about it, but I just started noticing. It's like every year the light turns gold and the pomegranates are ready. But then that company down in, I guess it's Southeast California, Palm Wonderful.
Uh-huh.
They've been trying to change. They planted hundreds of acres, I guess, and they've been trying to change the season and extend it. And people now at a couple of local markets say, no, pomegranates have never been available until Thanksgiving. That's not true.
Yeah, right. There was a commercial pomegranate juice company out of Napa.
Uh-huh.
I haven't heard about them in a few years. I used to be able to buy pomegranate juice in 5-gallon buckets.
Oh, okay. Yes. And I think they were on Highway 29.
I never went to visit them.
Yeah, I remember passing. I don't think I ever stopped because I just want real pomegranates.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered one when, much to my mother's chagrin. We got one from somebody when I was 5 years old and went trick-or-treating. Somebody gave me a pomegranate.
Uh-huh.
And she tried to hide it.
You know, pomegranates also are good for people that don't have an orchard or are going to move or something, because they do tolerate growing in pots.
Oh, they do. Oh, that's nice
like
to know.
Like a lot of different fruits don't. And so you can take it with you. And some of our members, they'll buy these plastic garbage cans on wheels up at one of the big box stores and fill that with dirt and make it like half perlite so it's fairly light, punch some drain holes in the bottom, plant a tree, and now, you know, you got a 30-gallon pot. You can grow a pretty good tree.
Tree, yeah.
Might be hard to lift, but you can take it with you.
That's true. That's true. Interesting. I know. The other thing about pomegranates, you know, with their genesis in the Middle East, in that region, the Middle East, if I get this right, because I am not Jewish, so please forgive me if I get anything wrong, but there's a certain number of mitzvahs or good deeds that a Jewish person is supposed to do in a lifetime. And it is said that the pomegranate represents that number, that there are 600, it's either 619 or 691 arils in the average pomegranate.
Hmm.
And that's the number of mitzvahs that a Jewish person is supposed to do in a lifetime.
Yeah, there's a fruit fact I never heard before.
Well, I'll track it down. I'll make sure that I'm right, and I'll send you a corrected version if I need to. But I find that charming.
Yeah, you know, there's lots of customs that and tribal behaviors and such that are based around harvest and fruit and how many seeds in the apple. And,
right. You know, is there something about how many seeds? How many seeds is an apple supposed
to? Don't know.
Oh, we don't know. Okay. And I always look at pomegranates as I look at, say, artichokes and cardoons and even oysters and things. Who was the first human to try that, to eat that?
They were hungry.
They were hungry, and it must have been a pomegranate that cracked open either on the tree or on the ground. And they, I assume they probably saw bees or wasps feeding on it and thought, well, if it's good enough for them, maybe I should give it a try.
Yeah, and you can bet it wasn't the quality that we have today either.
Yeah, that's very true. Mike, should we have some more music?
Yeah, and it says in here someplace, the Jewish Gift Place, whatever website that is, that the pomegranate traditionally has 613 seeds,
oh, 13.
Which is the number of mitzvahs.
I remembered wrong. 613, that's a good number. Song is Forbidden Fruit by, of course, the band. The band is the music we are playing tonight. While we were listening to that music, Mike looked up pomegranates online, and the word for grenade comes from the French word for pomegranate. Is that right?
Yeah. The Oxford English Dictionary says that the French for pomegranate is la grenade.
There you go, grenade. And you can think, you know, if you stand above a cement platform and drop a pomegranate, you'll understand the meaning immediately. Okay, we got a couple things you want to talk about. Let's go with starlings first.
Okay.
This is hilarious.
Starlings are a pest. You know, the big, beautiful clouds of swirly black birds you see seasonally coming through were... I forget. They introduced them, I think, to control some bug or something, and they have no predators here. And they cause over $1 billion worth of fruit damage in the U.S. a year. Here, you know, you see all the fruit protection people put nets over their grapes and their fruit, and they got these noise machines and all kinds of things to try to keep those flocks of starlings out. They're very
aggressive.
Oh, so
that's all for starlings.
Excuse me?
That's all for starlings.
Yeah,
all that
English
protection.
Starling. They're called starling because if you see one, they're shiny black, and they're covered with these little white dots. It's kind of like looking at a starry night on a moonless night. And they're really kind of pretty that way, but they are horribly invasive. They'll come through. They'll eat all the grapes. They'll eat all my berries. They'll peck every peach to see if it's ripe. I don't think they're very smart. And they'll bruise the peach so that it's... You know, not sellable. I don't do any sale, but, you know, it just causes a lot of trouble and rot. And I did some research on controlling them. And what I did, you know, I used ribbons in the sky and, you know, balloons with cat eyeballs on them, helium balloons.
Did that help?
It does for a while. But
and then they figure it out.
They figure it out pretty quick. So, you know, regretfully, I just started shooting them because what happens is not all of them will move on. And migrate. Many of them will nest here in Sonoma County and multiply, and this becomes home base, and then all the offspring come back and multiply and multiply and multiply. So I had like a couple of dozen starling families that were predating my orchard. So I have a little air rifle, a little Italian air rifle. Mm-hmm. And so I started shooting them. It's such a waste. You know, I really don't like to kill things unless I eat it. Mm-hmm. So I looked it up, and it turns out in Europe there's a commercial market for starling meat. So I said, what the heck? I looked it up. So I started eating them just like I would a duck or a goose. Mm-hmm. And you can breast them out, and you get a little starling breast about twice the size of a quarter.
And so similar maybe to a quail.
Similar to a quail, but smaller.
A little smaller.
Then I did a little more research and found that they have a blood parasite of the genus Haemoproteus. In addition to the scarlet nematode, a worm which during its life cycle multiplies in the lungs to the point may choke you into suffocation. So I don't do my starling medium rare anymore.
Oh,
I do
yikes.
Them well done.
Uh-huh. And only the breast, or just
only the breast?
Only
right,
the breast,
right? Because they don't walk around much. The only muscles are up there in the wings.
Okay,
but
how do you cook them?
I just pan fry them, a little salt and pepper. Put them; they just fit perfectly on a Ritz cracker with a little bit of sour cream. It's a very American dish.
That is the first all new food I've heard about in a while. When is the season for them?
Berry season, okay. Strawberry, white mulberries.
May until October?
Yeah, June, July.
Mm-hmm. So you're in it right now?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, also, I used to manage a walnut orchard and found a squirrel is really tasty. Raccoon. I've never tried skunk. I did a dish for the potluck at the Slow Food Annual Meeting. There was a raccoon was killing all my chickens. Is this okay to talk about in the
show?
Yes,
absolutely okay. Fine.
So, neighbor's dog treed one of these things, and I shot it. And it was this monstrous raccoon. It was almost 4 foot nose to tail. It'd been killing my chickens for a few years. And so I made this stew, and I put a big label on it just so people wouldn't eat it accidentally. If I remember right, I named it Russian River Appalachian Heritage Slow Running Organic Chicken Fed Raccoon in a Lagunitas IPA Cubillon sauce, and served it, and people loved it. It was delicious. But I actually had two women that came up at the meeting and said, I was going to love to try that, but what's the stuff in wheat that so many people don't eat?
Is there any gluten in it?
I'm gluten intolerant. I'm going, you're willing to eat roadkill that I poured a beer on and you won't eat it because there's
because there's gluten in beer.
And the gluten in the beer. I thought that was pretty funny. It was worth the whole effort. But it was quite tasty. The thing with raccoon, you really have to strip the fat off them because the fat is bitter. Learned that as a kid. Grew up in the country. You know, we used to eat everything. Uh-huh.
You know, I have a couple cookbooks with recipes for raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried it. I've never declined it. I've just never been around it.
It's very much like the dark meat on a heritage turkey.
That's what I would figure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very earthy.
Right.
Earthy, rich, little gamey, but not in a bad way.
Like dark venison.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I bet you could make some really good raccoon crepinettes. Grind it up and then wrap it in caul fat. Probably be really good.
Wow.
You also wanted to talk about an apple.
Yes. You know, most people have heard about Burbank around here.
Yes.
And some people have heard about Etter. Etter was a guy like Burbank up in Mendocino County who hybridized apples. Now, the difference between hybridizing and grafting is hybridizing, you're pollinating, seed and egg, breeding, you know, and the genetic characteristics of every seed and every apple is different. So if you want to make a new apple, you cross one apple with another. Even though you cross, let's say, a Golden Delicious with a Gravenstein, you still have to plant out all the seeds and test all of the fruit that comes off it, because every one of those could have a different fruit just because of the genetic mix that happens, Mother Nature.
And then what you'd want to do is choose the one that tasted the best.
Right, and grow that right. And that's how you hybridize and come up with most of the kind of foods we have today. They've been bred to be what they are. Now, there was another guy. There's an apple that's kind of rare named Hawaii. It's a yellow apple. It's kind of interesting because there, people with maybe better taste buds than me think it tastes different on one side of the tree from the other. It can taste different from one side of the apple from the other because we think maybe it's a little bit photosensitive.
Ah.
So it's been a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing some research on where it came from, and it turns out there's this man named William Silva who lived in Sebastopol. And I was able to go to the National Patent Office and find the patent on his Hawaii apple. And what I found is he did a dozen different apples, Hawaii of which was the only one that ever achieved commercial viability. And it's been surpassed by so many other apples mm-hmm. nowadays.
Have you tasted the Hawaii apple?
Hawaii is a great apple. It's a great apple. Turns out, and you go back to the patent office, you can find these things. It's a cross between a Gravenstein and a Golden Delicious.
Do you know anything about what brought about the name?
We don't. We don't know where his name. I have looked up every Silva around. You know, Mom Pa's guy. I talked to Cliff.
Silva. Cliff,
never
Cliff
heard
Silva.
Of him.
Okay.
There's a William Silva mentioned in that antique apple farmer's book. You know, there goes little books about
right.
every city in the
yes.
county. There's a William Silva in there. There's a Bill Silva in there and a picture of him. And I looked him up, not online. I found him in the phone book. And I call him up. He's the right age. I think he's in his 80s or so. They had an apple trucking company. I think he still drives the truck.
Today he's
but
alive?
But it wasn't him, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it wasn't him.
Oh.
So that was a dead end. And so I looked up where Hawaii was sold. It was sold through a nursery in Southern California. So I Google Earthed it and dialed in, and now it's a subdivision. You know, so I went to Paula with the fruit growers, and I'm not going to say the address on air, but mm-hmm. it's in Sebastopol. And so
this tree?
No,
this,
the original
oh,
address
the original
for the patent
okay.
where he made his
oh,
trees.
Okay.
So Paula knew one of his neighbors who's an apple grower, got all to him. He told me the original guy's name, says, you remember swimming in the pond? I went down. He's an old man, you know, Silva, and the guy that bought it before the current owner, and I tracked them down, but he turned out to be dead. So the current owner was a nice lady. Sounds pretty old, you know, last remaining person there.
Mm-hmm.
She says, no, it's all grapes here now. There's no apples. I love what you're doing, but there's none of your trees. I thought maybe some of his trees were there.
Uh-huh.
So we're hunting these trees. Now, we're pretty sure we found one of the other 11 trees that have been missing since the 60s. Silva did this from the 40s to the 60s. So we've been on this treasure hunt. You know, these kids do this Pokemon thing now. What does a Pokemon taste like? We're hunting rare apples here yeah. that are great. So the Hawaii is a Golden Delicious Gravenstein cross. Red Scarlet is a Red Delicious Gravenstein cross.
Ooh, I would love to taste
Rachel,
that.
Through Rachel Spaeth, who manages the volunteers, we've been putting word out on all our different uh-huh. organizations. One of the volunteers at the Burbank Gardens has one she remembers buying with her dad. So now we're taking it and we're having
Burbank Experiment Farm?
Oh, no, the Burbank Garden downtown.
Oh, the downtown one, okay.
One of the volunteers there.
Uh-huh.
So now what we're doing is we're getting samples of it to do genetic testing to verify it really is. Because who knows? I forget
sure.
what some of my trees are.
Sure.
But there's some others we're on the hunt for. And if anybody has any of these, we're looking for Best Ever, Bonanza, Bonfire, Chief, Dominant, Golden Beauty, Majestic, Monarch, and it's not the Kansas Monarch, and Silva Jelly Red. Somebody owns these things. Somebody has these trees. They're probably 50, 60 years old in their orchard or their garden. And we'd love to get some and bring them back. We do a lot of rescuing of trees that are down mm-hmm. to like one, like the Russian River Gravenstein.
Mm-hmm.
We got a rescue from the 1920s from the mm-hmm. original trees. Catherine, one of Etter's trees, was down to one limb on his ex-mother-in-law's house in Mendocino. And we've rescued it and brought it back, and we graft them up, sell them to collectors, raise money for your kids' scholarships, and to fund hunting more trees. So we're on the hunt for William Silva trees. So the city of Sebastopol now is doing this planting of Sebastopol-related heritage fruit. So was it Daily Acts in mm-hmm. the Sebastopol City and us are all working to try to find, if we can, some of these trees before they're gone forever.
What a great adventure. Thank you. That's fascinating. I want to talk to you more about this. This is something I want to write about. We only have a few minutes left, and so real quickly, one of my favorite fruits, and I just want to see if my thinking about this is correct. I love peaches. Love peaches. I love white peaches. I love Arctic Gem white peaches. I love the Arctic Gem white peaches grown at Dry Creek Peach and Produce.
Mm-hmm.
Is it simply, or not so simply, terroir that makes the same variety of fruit taste extraordinary in one place and mediocre in another?
It's total environment. You know, we have 13 microclimates here in Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. Down in the mud and the fog is going to be different than mm-hmm. that really nice West Dry Creek dirt that grows mm-hmm. such good grapes. And people don't plant apples and peaches mm-hmm. there because the grapes are worth so much more.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have all of the original trees when Gail and Brian Sullivan bought Dry Creek Peach and Produce. If I remember correctly, there were 38 well-established older Arctic Gem white peaches. Mm. And I think there's only one left because they, got to the end of their lifetime. But mm-hmm. they've grafted over a number of varieties to Arctic Gem. And every year I went, I was like, am I crazy? Am I just romanticizing this peach? And then I eat one of the peaches. It's ruined me for all other peaches.
You know, I grow 15 varieties of peaches, and I don't think any of mine are as good as any of theirs.
That one, Arctic Gem. Right now I have two flats of Arctic Gems that I picked up yesterday. I'm going to make I developed a chutney just for this particular peach. It doesn't have as much sugar or as much spice as most chutneys do because I just want the flavor of the peach to show through, and it does.
That's so what you want, the flavor.
If I get some, I will share with you.
Okay.
Now, we have to tell people how to get involved, how to reach the Redwood Empire chapter. You gave the website once, but let's give the website again.
Yeah, it's the initials of the group for California Rare Fruit Growers, so crfg.org.
crfg.org.
Or just Google Rare Fruits Sonoma County. We'll show up.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. And this was fascinating. I learned so much in this hour.
It's infinite. And once you start looking into it.
Yeah, all these fruit geeks in just the best possible way.
We have amazing fruit geeks.
It's really wonderful. And the organization, do you meet monthly?
No, we have events, not meetings. We had 50 kind of fruit at a tasting in my house 2 weeks ago. We'll do greenhouse tours, orchard tours, tasting. We had a mulberry tasting in my house one day right on a tree. Everybody just swarmed the trees like locusts.
And on that note, we are out of time here on Mouthful. Have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. See a policeman on the street, smile and say hi. See somebody who kind of freaks you out because they look so different than you do. Smile, say hi. Maybe talk to him. Life is tough in the world right now. We got to stick together. And meet me here next week, 6 o'clock, for another yummy episode of Mouthful. Smart talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB Radio 91.